This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I am Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. The Sydney Opera House, London's Tate Britain, and New York's National September 11 Memorial and Museum, all iconic buildings that have one thing in common, an international property and infrastructure company called Lendlease. And soon added to that list will be Malaysia's very own Tun Razak Exchange. So today we have in the studio their CEO for Asia, Tony Lombardo, to find out about the company's plans for this region and how they intend to grow in these challenging times. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, let's start off with 2019, a little bit of a review, because it wasn't such a good year for Lendlease, right? Because even in last year's chairman's report, Michael Armour said that 2019 had been a difficult year and there remains much to be done in 2020. So tell us a little bit, what happened there?
Yeah, look, 2019, we did have some hiccups in our engineering business, which impacted the overall group performance. However, that business, just pre-Christmas, we announced the sale of the engineering business. So I think what we're trying to do is get our shareholders confident in the business in terms of the way forward. But when you look at the urbanisation space, which is a core plank to the strategy, our development pipeline in the last 12 months has grown to some 100 billion Aussie dollars worth of developments globally. So we're sitting and we're feeling very confident as a team that we're well positioned for the future.
Okay, now let's bring it back to Asia. How important is this region to the Lendlease Group? Because you are a global company, a global property company listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, market cap about 10 billion Australian dollars.
That's correct.
Now, I did a bit of digging in the 2019 annual report, and Asia is about 15% of earnings before interest, depreciation and amortization, or otherwise known as EBITDA, for 2019. But is there a target to shift that contribution higher? What is your KPI, Tony?
Yeah, well, I moved to Asia just over 3.5 years ago. And as the strategy for Lendlease, we wanted to really diversify and make sure we gain a foothold internationally. Asia is very important to us. I've been granted by the group to invest over $1.5 to $2 billion of capital in this part of the world. So firstly, that would represent about 20% of Lendlease's balance sheet. And as you know, developments take time to develop. So you are buying land and the returns only come through in latter years. So, you know, eventually we should see our contribution raised to EBITDA-wise around that 20% mark that matches our capital that we've got allocated, because we've got similar hurdles that we've set for the organisation. So very focused. I mean, we've been here in Malaysia for some odd 40 years coming up to, in Singapore for over 46 years. So, you know, we've got a very deep history of being in this part of the world. It's really now making sure we set the business up for the long term here in Asia.
And Lendlease has an interesting integrated model that you all use regardless of the region, right? So it's development, construction and investments. Let's look at this from an Asian perspective. And I want to start with urban renewal, which is part of development. But let's skip TRX for the moment. But where is the growth going to come from in this region? Because the Paya Lebar Exchange is almost complete, and that was your biggest project in this part of the world. Because the pipeline in Asia has declined, right, from 6.9 billion Australian dollars in 2018 to 5 billion in 2019. Are we going to see an even lower number in 2020 then?
No, at the moment we're looking at new opportunities. So we are selective on the types of sites, as you know, that we only bid for large urbanisation projects, and we look for projects where we can become the master developer because we see that's where we can add the most value from our integrated approach to development. There's probably a couple of projects we're looking to bid this year in Singapore that are becoming available, and they're quite significant. They're very large projects. There's another two projects I'm looking at currently here in Malaysia. And also we've decided to expand and we are looking at opportunities in urbanisation in Tokyo City. So we are looking to grow that pipeline. I've been tasked with growing that to circa 15 billion. So as a team, that means we've got to secure circa another 3 to 4 large urbanisation projects over the next 24 months.
Okay, so 15 billion in 2 years' time. Okay. Yep. But do you think there is this general slowdown in the region? I mean, we have seen, especially like, let's say in the case of Singapore, their GDP has come back has come down quite a fair bit. If anything, they just kind of averted a technical recession. At the same time, there's controls on their residential market. You know, it's kind of a general slowdown even in Malaysia. So is it going to be a challenge to kind of fill up that pipeline?
Yeah, look, I look at, from a real estate perspective, we're always looking at the market long term. And if I look at the markets last year for the last 12 months, I think the US-China trade war definitely impacted things because, you know, Asian economies are trading economies. And so with that slowdown with the two biggest economies in the world, I think there was, you know, repercussions for markets. But if I look at long term, when you look at the dynamic, Southeast Asia, you know, in the next decade, it's assumed that the consuming population would grow to 163 million. So it will double from its current standards. When we're looking at cities around the world, they're urbanizing. KL today, about 75% of people live in an urban environment. That's forecast by 2050 to get to 90%. That's happening in all the large gateway cities. So long term, the fundamentals for KL, for Singapore, for Tokyo, for cities like Shanghai are very strong. So those cities constantly outperform the country GDP. That's our focus.
Antonio, I noticed an absence from other countries in Asia. So, of course, you've got inroads in China, Singapore, Malaysia, Japan, but I see no presence in Indonesia, India, Thailand, or even in boomtown Vietnam. Is there a reason for this?
There is. I mean, firstly, we talk about the integrated model. It's really in the last probably 5 years that Lendlease started to invest significant development capital into the region. So we definitely need to scale up our platforms here in Malaysia, Singapore, Shanghai and Japan. So the focus is about scaling up those businesses. We then have, you know, aspirations to move into markets like India, Vietnam and potentially Indonesia. But we'll only do that once we get through our scale curves and really drive sustainable, profitable businesses in each of the four countries.
And let's look a little bit more closely at the construction segment now, right? Because all the work at this juncture is in-house for Asia. Is that related to just what I asked? I mean, because you want the control and you want to have some say over how things are done. Because when I look at the revenue, it's down to Australian 0.4 billion, while from an EBITDA margin perspective, it's gone to a negative number, a negative 2 versus a positive 2.8% in 2018. What happened here? This negative number kind of sticks out because in Australia and Europe, you enjoy positive margins of 3.1% and 4.3% respectively.
Yeah, look, we do have, as the market slowed down, the opportunities to win some of the external work actually dried up. So one of the areas we do focus on is the pharma industry in Singapore. We've built out about 90% of those facilities and that investment had been delayed. So we are working with certain clients and hopefully that work will return over the next 12 to 24 months. So it is a bit cyclical because it really is dependent on the investment cycle and it really does depend on some of these drug makers when they're about to launch a new blockbuster drug. So there's a couple of those discussions going on. So hopefully we return the construction back to profitability over the next sort of 12 months. But it does focus predominantly on what we build internally. So it is building all our internal pipeline, but it does focus on some other areas like data centers and pharma. And that work, it's just dependent on the cycle at a point in time.
And now investments, because actually that's quite a big part of Lendlease Asia, right? But even then, EBITDA dropped from Australian 55 million to 50 million, so a 9% decline, but better than the group, which is down 26%. Why is this figure dropping for investments, though?
Some of the investments, we had some underlying growth in the real estate. So as that real estate value growth has dropped off, some of the performance has dropped off. However, in the next 12 months, we'll see a bigger contribution through Asia because one of the big things we did was launch the global REIT here in Singapore. And so that will be a solid contributor for us and therefore you should see that line from an Asian perspective definitely increase in this period. period.
Yeah, and then this land lease global commercial REIT, which you just mentioned, right? It debuted at 88 cents. That was the IPO price.
Correct.
Now it's 92 and a half cents. Congratulations. It's above water. So just to clarify, it has one retail property, 313 Somerset in Orchard Road,
yep.
And three office buildings in Milan, right? So not a lot of assets. So what else is in the pipeline?
Yeah, I mean, we started the pop. It is a global REIT. And it does have a global mandate, and it can invest in both office and retail. So land lease, when you look at our $100 billion of development pipeline, about $35 billion of that will be commercial, retail, and office. So those assets, we are now starting to work out when we're going to develop those. So we are now working with our REIT and creating a strategy for the next 5 years. So we're looking at what we believe will be the right assets to put in the REIT, delivering the right returns to the investors that we've
created. So what is the right kind of return? What kind of yield are you looking? Because it has to be yield accretive.
Well, that's right. And I mean, at the moment, it's trading at about a 5.6% yield as it's tightened up. So to me, we're always looking for assets that get a yield and hit that performance target and show a little bit of growth as well.
I've been speaking to Tony Lombardo, CEO for Lendlease Asia. Up next, Tun Razak Exchange. And how does Lendlease intend to move away from the stigma associated with this project? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Tony Lombardo, CEO for Lendlease Asia. Just a moment ago, we were talking about their plans for this global property and development company in Asia, which currently has more than $100 billion Australian dollars worth of projects in their pipeline. Now, we need to bring this conversation back to Malaysia and specifically the Tun Razak Exchange or TRX. Now, you have a 60% stake in the lifestyle quarter of this, which is 17 acres of the total 70-acre development site, right?
That's correct.
Now, it's been touted as the new international financial district. You know, it's going to be underpinned by commercial, residential, hospitality, retail, leisure, and cultural offerings. A lot of things packed into this 70 acres. But the problem with TRX, or the issue with TRX, I find, is when you mention it, there's unfortunately or immediate association with the 1MDB ongoing saga. So tell me, Tony, how do you plan to move away from this stigma?
Look, I think people are moving on, and I think there's always a stigma attached to something that's quite political. But when I look at it, we've been involved in this project. I just want to talk about TRX itself. The master plan of TRX, being 70 acres, is one of probably the better master plans we've seen globally. So that attracted us in the first place to TRX, because we do feel when we benchmark it versus a Marina Bay Sands in the financial district in Singapore versus the Canary Wharf, the government really took some real effort to master plan this whole precinct, and it does benchmark quite well against the international peers. When we look at the lifestyle quarter itself, there were some things that attracted us to this site. Because of the two MRT connections that are going to occur, this will be the only site you can get to 68 stations across Malaysia. And when you look at the highways and freeways that connect up to the site, it's going to be one of the best connected sites from my perspective in KL. When you're looking at some of the players who are coming to the district, HSBC's building their head office, Prudential's already moved in. We're watching Affin Bank develop their site. We're also seeing that the Exchange 106 is leasing up to very good international tenants that are coming. So when we complete the retail mall, which is our first key component, which is a 2.2 million square foot mall, which will deliver another 500 stores to the location, there'll be some 25,000 employees that are in occupying those office buildings. So for me, that underpins our development from our perspective. And I think Malaysians will be very proud when they see the final product. I think it's always hard to picture and envisage what's about to occur, but the amount of infrastructure and investment that's been made in this location, I think will really set the benchmark, and this will be the heart of KL CBD from my perspective.
No longer KLCC then?
No longer KLCC.
You're going to take away the crown from them?
We'll take away the crown, because I think a lot of planning has gone into the site, the walkability, the connectivity, and the 10-acre park that's going to be delivered on top of the mall will, for the first time in two decades, deliver a lot of green space back to the public.
But if we look at the retail space, because you mentioned that earlier, right? I mean, that's the first phase. There already is a lot of competition in the KL area, and I'm not even looking outside the Klang Valley. I mean, we already have 10.65 million square feet of retail space in KL. So how are you going to differentiate yourself? And is that a danger because you're so reliant on the employees that work in the different buildings nearby? Would it be a ghost town on weekends then?
Look, when I look at the retail environment, if you look at the last 3 years, KL's retail spend's increased between 8 to 9% for the last 3 years. So compared to global averages, that's very high. So firstly, people here in Malaysia are spending more.
And we love our malls. We love anything in air-conditioned environments because of the heat. Right?
And I can sense that. And when I come to Asia, you can get a sense that they become the community hub. I think the benefit we've got is we are going to make this an experience centre. And the benefit of having the park, I think people will have a lot of options to dwell. So there's going to be a lot of community space that's given back to people just to spend time there. And I think that's going to make a difference. Now, when we talk about progress, we're currently at the moment 50% leased and committed under final negotiations. We're still 24 months away from opening. So I'm feeling pretty confident that we are appealing to the market, and that's much, there'll be, you know, the right experiences when it comes to food. You know, we really want to make sure that this is an international scene. We're bringing new retailers into the market. We're going to make sure we look after part of the precinct that's tailored to young Malaysian startups that are starting new fresh businesses so they can, you know, lease stores and sell goods and do different things. But we are focused on trying to get the right mix and make the experience. So we are, you hear a lot about it, experiential, but because we're designing that today, we're able to work quite closely with the retail environment to really deliver what we believe is the next generation mall from my perspective.
And there is a residential element to this also, right?
There is. We're going to be developing 2,400 apartments over six towers. So we are getting ready for our TRX residence launch, which is upcoming.
Because if anything, if you ask me, I think the most challenging part is high-end residential in KL. I mean, even the Knight Frank says that high-end residential is challenging amid this demand-supply imbalance. And you're in the market, you know how many units there are that are available for sale and don't seem to be sold at all, after two, 3 years. So how are you going to differentiate yourself? I mean, or are you a believer in that, you know, build it and they will come, or build it and I can sell it?
Well, one of the things I would say is mixed-use projects do have a competitive advantage because of its connectivity and the amenity that's provided, and people see that they're able to save a lot of time. We're finding that those precincts do outperform the broader market. So firstly, when you look at these large integrated mixed-use developments, there's not that many going on. And so when I talk about the rail MRT and the connectivity, and I see the investment that Malaysia is now making in that space, people start to value those things. And, you know, I'll give an example. At Palabar, we did this large mixed-use site. We've sold 100% of our residential. When we originally started to sell those projects, it was in a softer market, and we beat the pricing by about 25% to the broader catchment. So people do value the mixed-use element, and they're seeing that benefit because it does save time when you can walk downstairs and you straight into a restaurant or a cafe. So your lifestyle does improve.
I mean, of course, lifestyles change. But if you look at the KLCC example, there are many condos dot the KLCC area, right? And they continue to remain unsold. At the same time, there is Bintang City Centre coming up, which is also integrated mixed-use development, 19.4 acres, similar to your size. Yep. So a lot of competition, Tony. How are you going to really compete? I mean, because there are just only so many buyers, right, who will pay. I presume your per square foot price will be at least above 2,000 ringgit?
I think we are working exactly when to price. I mean, we are launching on the 20th of Feb, so people will get to see where we're pricing. What we are trying to do is make sure the product meets both local needs, but it has a flair of our international expertise. You know, we are one of the biggest global developers when it does come to residential, so we'll bring some of that.
Are you watching how the core is going to do? Because they are the first residential component, right, within TRX, and they launched in November. I understand they set a benchmark price of 2,200 per square foot. So are you going to be around that level?
I won't disclose pricing because that will come in our release around the 20th of Feb. But what I'd say is we are looking at affordability. We're looking at how we design the apartments. We want them to be affordable, and we're looking at, you know, the full nominal value of these apartments. So, you know, we're quietly confident that our product, you know, matches our international brand and flavour. And I'm hoping that the market, when they come to see it, are really going to love what they see as a product.
Okay. And now for land lease, right? Am I correct? Safety is the number one priority here, always.
Correct.
But I understand that a construction worker did get seriously injured on the TRX project where you were the construction manager. What happened there? Was there negligence on your part?
No, there was an accident that occurred. We're the project manager on one of the sites, and so it was unfortunate that one of the workers was injured and then later
passed away, right?
And so, you know, that was a very unfortunate incident. And so for us, there's a lesson out of every incident that does occur. You really do try to set the benchmark, and it is our number one priority. So to me, it was unfortunate for that worker, and, you know, our hearts go out to the family.
So what measures have you taken to make sure this doesn't happen again? I mean,
like everything.
Whose fault was it actually also?
Like in terms of fault, we go through various investigations. So we're not the primary contractor. There is a primary contractor who's running the site. So we're not the general contractor. In terms of fault, there are incidents that do occur. And so the authorities investigate. There's no fault attributed to anyone at this point. So they'll go through their various investigations and the like.
But have you stepped up any safety procedures in the TRX construction site?
Whenever we learn from an incident, we're always aiming to improve. So every incident that occurs is a lesson that we learn. And across our business, one of the key things we do is we measure every what we call critical incidents. So these are things that could have led to a fatality. They're treated like a fatality, and we're constantly using those incidents to improve the business performance. So that's one of the key areas that for us as a business, it's important to employ lessons that you learn to improve your business performance.
On that note, thank you for your time today, Tony, to tell us about land leases plans in Asia and more specifically for Malaysia, especially TRX. I'm Wong Xiaoning for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.